Jeff Richardson invites you to listen to Foolish Wits, the only show where two funny leftists talk Shakespeare, comedy, writing, social issues, and more. Find out more at jeffsawesomepods.com.
This is an Unspoiled Network podcast.
This is Some Spoiled, a song of ice and fire to the co-host Switcheroo. Yada, yada, yada. Covering A Storm of Swords, chapters 20 and 21. Catelyn and Jaime. In these chapters, the theme is... Well, really, basically the theme is no one told you that was gonna be this way. Sorry, folks, but it's not going your way today. Welcome to Unspoiled.
Monsters are dangerous, and just now, kings are dying like flies.
I am the king!
Fuck the king.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Natasha.
I'm Rashawn.
Alrighty, here we go. Catelyn.
These two chapters are just like consequences, you know, consequences. Just like,
we don't care. Wait, I'm sorry. Can you?
You know, like they just, you know, like there are going to be consequences to our actions, but we just don't care about those. Mm-hmm. And then they come home to roost.
Ta-da. Yeah, I would like to be able to avoid them also. I get it, guys.
Listen, that's the dream. Mm-hmm. That is the absolute dream. What was that fucking meme from forever ago? What is it?
Well, well, well.
Yes! If yes!
Consequences of my own actions.
That's the one.
Yep. And it really is sort of interesting because with both Jaime and Rob, there is, and of course Catelyn, but I'm thinking of Rob because he's the one who winds up swinging the sword, you know. It does feel like things might not have had to go this way if you had handled things slightly differently than the way you did.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just, it's just a lot of what ifs.
Yeah. The thing about Rob is, I mean, and it's so clearly illustrated from Karstark himself, that I'm not sure what Rob could have done short of letting this man have the vengeance and kill Jaime Lannister to avoid being in this situation, right?
Well, let's get to that. We'll put that on ice for a second, and then we will discuss what those possibilities could have been. So we start off with the carrying in of the corpses, and this is very out of, like, nowhere. You know, we don't know who they are. We don't know.
We sure don't.
Anything about what's happening here. It's just this kind of, like, shock moment of these two naked young men who were murdered being dropped in front of the fucking throne, essentially, and Catelyn looking at them and feeling sick to her stomach because there's just a very strong aura of it's clear these guys were not in any position to defend themselves when they died.
Right. You know? Right. And we find out how young they were later.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's looking, she can't help but imagine her boys. And then later, she even wonders if Rob is having the same experience. Is he also seeing Bran and Rickon?
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, Kat can't stop thinking about what would happen to Sansa. Sansa is, you know, in this same position in King's Landing, being held by the enemy,
yep.
Right? And now, looking what has happened in Rob's house, and she can't help but imagine, my God, what if this happened to Sansa? Would they do it the same way? Would they just lay her body in front of the Iron Throne?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm standing here looking at these two little boys that are dead now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rough. I didn't recall, because, like, in the show, this is done slightly differently.
I cannot remember.
So, first of all, Jamie Lannister in the show, there's only one son that's killed. And Jamie didn't kill him in battle the way it is here. He killed him while trying to escape that one time. So it was a much more direct kind of brutal murder than just in battle the way that... Because the fact that these boys died in battle is part of what makes Rob so sick about the man trying to compare these two situations. But in the show, the comparison feels a lot more direct because the way that Jamie killed them felt so personal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And... It's just, yeah, there's just a whole different vibe to the way that Jamie, committed his offense to begin with that I think flavors the handling of it so that it feels less sympathetic to Rob. Like, it makes Rob look like he's really, really making the wrong call.
On the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas here, I feel like, you understand a lot more why he's making the call he is. It's not like a great idea, but you get it. And in the show, I feel like there's a much stronger sense of like, oh, Rob, come on. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, it's the moment here too that I think is interesting is that like Rob and his people and Catelyn are in this room. But none of the men who have allegedly committed this crime are in the room yet. They get called in a little bit later. They've been taken into custody because absolutely no effort has been made to hide what they did. They are not interested in being, like, skulky about this. They are right out there with it.
Yeah, right, yeah. It turns out that it's funny because, like, I just really don't remember much of any of this. I remember Rob having to kill Karstar, but, like, the details around it, I didn't remember. And that, I don't know if it goes this way on the show, but finding out in the book that they have left the night before, like they started slipping out, you know, shows that it helps us understand that they knew what they were doing.
Yep.
It was not just like a single or a small number of people who, you know, had decided to take matters into their own hand, that this was coordinated and understood, and that that some people were willing to die for this, It was understood that not everybody was going to get away, and that didn't keep them from doing it.
Exactly.
I feel like, I don't know if it's really how it went, but I feel like on the show, after this happens, then, like, the people who supported Karstar kind of leave?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because it feels more dramatic to, like, actually watch them riding away.
Yeah.
And then, basically spitting at him over their shoulder as they take off versus, we're just going to have that happen sort of off camera. Which is the kind of thing where, honestly, I get why it seems like that would be more dramatic, but I think having it happen off camera would have been, if they decided to do it that way, they could handle it in a way that would be very shocking and could have done, but the show was kind of lazy in a lot of respects. Yeah. So
I like the idea of the magnitude of this. Like, it feels like when you're reading it there, when I say they, I mean Rob and everyone else, they're just sort of understanding that, well, we could lose everybody, you know, we're never going to maintain their support. And then you get to see in real time them being informed, oh, no, they already left.
Yep.
You know, like, that shit was sailed.
Yep.
They have gone in and murdered two children in their beds. And we were talking about our honor last, well, it comes up a lot because this book, keeps talking about that. And that's one of the things that keeps recurring in this conversation is that how the way Karstark's sons died on the battlefield, they died with honor, you know, and there was really nothing, you know, Jaime Lannister didn't, you know, just sneak into them, to their room in the middle of the night and kill them.
Right.
And Karstark is just like, that doesn't fucking matter, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see why you keep bringing that up. It doesn't matter. What does he say? Only blood can pay for blood. Mm-hmm. Like, he does not feel bad about what he's done at all. And when he calls Rob out for not punishing his mother for letting Jamie go, yeah, right in front of everybody,
he's like, oh yeah, he'll just scold me because that's the way he deals with treachery, our boy king. And I was just like, god damn, okay. Yeah, he is very, like, that's really what it feels like. It's like, Jamie killed my kids, and I was mad enough about that. But then he was allowed to escape, and you did shit all about that. Yep. And that's the part that he's really mad about.
Yeah. And it's, when I think of, like, the missteps that Rob made, one of the, of course, the biggest one that, you know, jumps to your head is the marriage to Jamie. Mm-hmm. But this is also part of his undoing.
Yeah.
What Catelyn did, and the fact that Rob sort of forgave her.
Yeah, basically. You know,
and she wasn't punished in a way that tradition would dictate. Mm-hmm. She put her son in a really impossible position. And then he went and put himself in an even worse position.
Yep.
By marrying Jane. Yep. But yeah, this is all like the sort of undoing of the North in these decisions that people make, and then the consequences show up a little, you know. Mm-hmm. It might not be immediate, but they keep showing up.
Yep. So when they the whole display here, it's just as you say, it's a complete lack of remorse, and if anything, him feeling free to be a lot more open with his contempt and basically mm-hmm. like daring Rob to do absolutely anything about it. And it's not even like, I was sort of like, couldn't remember if the fact that Rob is going to execute him seems to sort of like come as a surprise, like he thought that Rob wouldn't do anything and then Rob is doing something, and so he's like, oh well, wait a second, what about, but he doesn't. It's just more like, yeah, I fucking knew that this was going to be where you drew the line, because mm-hmm. that's how you are. You're not going to be doing this to your family, though, except yep. that I am kind of family, which is not exactly really strictly how that works, but it's the comparison he's choosing to make here, and I guess he's just full of poor comparisons in my opinion. Yeah. So
yeah, when Rob brings up how they're practically a family, Rob is just like, well, that didn't keep you from doing this bullshit, though, did it? Yep.
Oh, man, there's a moment, too, where Rob tells him to look at these, like, children that you slew, and he says, tell your mother to look at them. And I was like,
mm-hmm. says it's her fault. It's her fault, you know. Mm-hmm. And that comes out mere moments after Catelyn is thinking that to herself.
Yeah.
She is literally thinking to herself, I did this. Mm-hmm. And then Carstark is like, yeah, bitch, you did this. Mm-hmm.
I do kind of appreciate that she's like not even in her mind trying to deny it. She's just like, oh, he said the thing out loud. Mm-hmm, he said mm-hmm. the quiet part loud.
Yeah.
And she almost throws up when he says that mm-hmm. because she is so aware. And Rob says, my mother had nothing to do with this. And I'm like, look, I get that you want to say that, but you know that's not strictly true. Everybody knows that's not strictly true. So I don't feel mm-hmm, like that's helping mm-hmm. you right now by trying to claim that. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, he is just in such an impossible position where he's not going to hold his mother to task for what she did in any way that's meaningful to people who are expecting him to kind of hold the line. Mm-hmm. So since he's not going to do that, he has backed himself into this corner of supporting her publicly, regardless of what's hurled at her, whatever accusations people throw at her. Mm-hmm. He has to continue to defend her, even though he knows. he knows.
Yeah.
He's got to know. You know, that this she had nothing to do with this is not true. But he can't acknowledge that publicly anymore. Because to do so would be a constant sort of, yeah, I know she fucked up, but I'm not going to do anything about mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. You know, and nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants their leader to say that shit out loud. Yeah. So he has to do this, he has to do this performance. And it's just unfortunate.
Yeah, I really, again, it's just like such a weird position, and I would have liked if Rob had asked, Do you wish that I had executed her? Is that what you wish that I had done? I would like for him to enumerate exactly how he would have preferred this to go. I want to know what he wants.
Didn't he tell us at the when they find out what she's done?
Did he?
Doesn't he call for her to be dealt with as a traitor in the way that traitors are dealt with?
I can't remember. Maybe he does. Maybe you're right. Nevertheless, though, I would have liked Rob to just straight up ask him here, like, because I want to see that like conversation happen between
them. I feel like if that was asked at this moment, because he is just beyond giving a fuck and is, you know, understands that he's most likely going to die, so he's just going to say whatever the fuck he feels. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine if Rob had asked him that question, him not saying anything except she should hang right next to me.
Mm.
And then that puts Rob back in that position, because now Karstark has put it back on Rob. You're the one not doing your duty. This is what should happen. Are you man enough to do it? To which Rob is not going to be. Not that I think hanging your mother makes you a man. But you get what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah,
so there's no way Rob can win that. So it's smart that he doesn't ask.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That is a completely unwinnable conversation.
That's true. All right. Excuse me. I'll let you off on this one, Rob. So there's a point when he says he calls him boy and he gets like punched by the Great John.
Oh yeah. Great John is not here for that. Don't you be disrespecting my king in front of me like that.
Great John is just like foaming at the mouth to rip this guy to shreds. He is really mad in a way that I like that warms my heart, because I just like seeing people that are like really defensive of somebody that they care about. But anyway.
Passionately loyal.
Mm-hmm. That's the way to say it. So, and there's this guy as he's like, all right, so we're going to hang all of them. That's like, I was only the watcher. I didn't do anything. I was only standing outside the door. And Rob is like, did you hear them crying for murder? And the guy's like, well, yeah, but, and I'm like, dude, just say no.
Right? This is a terrible argument for leniency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, I didn't do anything. I just watched. That's almost worse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have just, I would have lied and said, not only did I not take part, but I ran when I realized what was happening.
Not only did I not hear the screams for mercy, but I also ran in them there and tried to stop them, and I got my ass kicked, like, just the whole thing. Just make up a
exactly,
whole thing.
Exactly, right? I'm just going to just make up whatever I
can. May as well at this point, like, what? Who's going to check you?
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, the other guys that are going to, you know, hang?
Do you think they would? Because they know they're going to hang out of their way.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think they would say something because they would see what he's doing. Well, you know, it's funny because no one says anything when he begs for mercy. Because what I was about to finish that sentence with is the other conspirators would see him begging in this fashion. And they would have to, like, say something, right? He's lying. He was part of it. You know, he should hang with the rest of us.
Right.
You know, call him names. Call him weak and a traitor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
But when he does this begging, it is not mentioned that any of the other prisoners have anything to say.
No.
So I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe he could have got away with it.
Who
I mean,
knows?
Yeah. So, but eventually, Rob is just like, okay, well, he can hang last or he can watch everybody. And I feel like that guy really set himself up for that.
Yep. Like, dude, did you not hear? Oh, my God. It's just like, you know what's happening as you're watching it happen. And he just won't shut his mouth. But I guess he just feels like, well, it's not like I've got a lot of other options here. So I'm just going to throw it all into this. What do you say? Put all my cards on the table? Put all my eggs in one basket? I mean, I'm kind of both, I guess, but... anyway, so as he gives that command, he sends out the Great John and all the others. And there's this line that I just, look, I'm not mad at Catelyn about her feelings, because obviously things are not going well and she has the right to be kind of like, Jesus, everything is going down the toilet. But it says, outside, the thunder crashed and boomed so loud it sounded as if the castle were coming down about their ears. Is this the sound of a kingdom falling? Catelyn wondered. No, it's thunder, Catelyn. That's what it is. Can you chill it on the dramatics? Because it's already quite dramatic enough, and you don't need to be adding your shit to it. It's fine. Just little moments like that where I'm like, girl, oh. They're like, life beyond this point for her is just going to be a constant sort of like, just sort of internal dramatic monologue, you know?
Well, yeah, everything is, you know, everything happening around her is just a representation of something that is like happening in her life.
Exactly.
You know? Even like, you know, a few minutes ago when she's looking at these two young dead children who, you know, had their own value as just being human beings, she looks at them and then thinks of her own sons. Like, everything is, you know, I'm not saying that she's, you know, I'm not trying to imply that she's
selfish,
you know, being selfish, but just that everything she looks at, just she filters everything through the lens of exactly what she's going through now. Yeah. So everything is, you know, commentary on the state of her family, the state of her children, the losses that she suffered.
And I mean, I have no problem with that, but it, like, this moment, is this the sound of a kingdom falling? That isn't exactly... It's one thing to just like, I am dealing with this like terrible grief, but then to frame it that way where it feels so melodramatic, I don't know. I just had a moment of like, oh, okay, calm down. It's quite bad enough. You don't need to be doing this.
Like, I don't know who to blame here. Do I blame Martin or do I blame Catelyn? I'm not really sure.
That's fair.
Who carries the burden for that? But so then the Blackfish had come into the throne room a little bit earlier when they were talking about what to do with everybody. And it's clear that he has news.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Rob says he will have that conversation in private. So after they're done, you know, saying what they're going to do with the traitors and everybody leaves, they have this conversation. And it is the Blackfish letting everyone know that the Karstarks are gone.
Yeah.
And we find out that, you know, all of the fighting men, most of the followers, they all just started leaving last night, first in small groups and then in large groups. And basically they left behind, I think, some wounded people,
mm-hmm,
and a couple of serving men to keep the fires lit so that no one would know that they were leaving.
Yeah.
But once the rain comes, and then it's like, bets are off. It doesn't even matter anymore. Yeah. And Catelyn, again, is just feeling like sick. Which is just, you know, how she feels these days.
It's true.
And this is when she thinks to herself again that, you know, this is her fault. They lost all of these fighting men, these horse, you know, men with horses, and it's because of the choice that she made.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And like, you know, I understand the choice that she made, but I understand it in the sort of theoretical sense. Do not feel like it did not feel like a good choice at the time, and now seeing like the consequences of it, it all, honestly, what she had done, it all did depend on the way that Rob decided to react to it as well. Mm-hmm. But she had to know he wouldn't be able to bear punishing her. Like, some of it is certainly that he was trying to offset the damage that she had done in their confrontation afterward, because he had gotten married and he was, mm-hmm, trying to trick her into, like, basically admitting that this shit happens. But even had that not been something he did, even if he hadn't gotten married, I don't think there was another option that he would have taken.
Agreed.
You know?
And that's what I mean earlier about, like, how he's just sort of in this unwinnable position that she's put him in, because she knows, even if she wasn't thinking about it consciously in the moment when she chose to free Jamie, she knew that her son was never going to kill her over this action.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that helped her. Like, it's interesting to consider, if that had been on the table, would she still have done what she did?
Mm.
Right? If her son, if Rob was a different type of man, you know, the kind of man that would kill his mother, would she still have freed Jamie? And I don't know if I have an answer for that, but I think it's interesting to think about, because I feel like Catelyn would not ever admit that she knew, I did this because I knew you wouldn't hold me to task for it. I don't think that's something that she ever says out loud. It's always, I did this because I'm desperate to do anything to save my daughters, and I'll take whatever responsibility for that action, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But she had to know.
I think so.
It's a little disingenuous, I think, for her to be like, yeah, I'll take the fucking consequences for the choice I made, whatever they may be, mm-hmm, knowing full well that the full breadth of consequences are not on the table for you.
Yeah. Agreed. And so there's this thing. Okay, I'm going to adjust my mic, guys. Everybody, sorry. I'm trying to straighten up here a little bit. Edmure is like, well, I think you shouldn't tell anybody.
My God.
And
my God.
I love that Rob looks at him like, it says, Rob gave Edmure a look that chilled. And then later on, when he's like, pardon him then, Rob stared at him in frank disbelief. Under that gaze, Edmure's face reddened. And the thing is, though, Edmure isn't wrong here in terms of the pardon him then. In terms of don't tell anybody.
That is ridiculous.
That's absurd. Of course people find out. They left. What do you think is going to happen? I'm like,
what's funny to me is that when Rob gives him that look, Rob is says, would you make me a liar,
mm-hmm,
as well as a murderer? And it's finally, it's the Blackfish who says they fucking already know the truth left with the car starts.
Yep.
What are you even talking about? So Rob comes at it back with just kind of like, that would be dishonorable. Like, because Edmure even goes, we don't have to lie. We just won't say anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I thought Rob's reaction would be, how dumb are you? You know, I thought that's what that look was. But it turns out Rob is kind of thinking a little bit more of like, you know.
It's honor.
Again, mm-hmm, it's honor.
And it's really interesting to me the way that the thing with honor keeps like, being shown,
it's very fluid.
It keeps being shown to, like, it's a weakness for Rob here in that he is making a bad choice and he is weighing things in a way that isn't actually to his benefit in the end because he's so hamstrung by his ego in a lot of ways. But then when we go to Jamie, as much as he has done the right thing in spite of what honor dictates, it is biting him in the ass because nobody takes anything he says seriously.
Right. I was thinking the same. Like, Rob at this point is also an oath breaker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's true.
Even, I guess maybe it's not as serious because he didn't swear in a sept or anything. But, you know, he gave his word that he was going to do a thing. And then he went and did a different thing.
Yeah.
And yet still behaves as if honor is the most important thing to him. I don't know. Like I said, it's very fluid, it seems. You know, one moment we're doing a thing or not doing a thing because honor is at stake, and the next minute we're doing whatever the fuck we want, and honor be damned.
Mm.
And it's doubly so because Rob, if this is true, breaks the oath with the phrase, to maintain the honor of this woman he sleeps with,
mm-hmm,
you know? So it's a weird, you know, like, I don't know. Like, how do you weigh which honor is the one that is the more important mm-hmm. that you have to uphold.
That really is the question. Yeah. It's a, it seems to be anything that, like, any attempt to mitigate the damage to yourself is sort of seen as inherently dishonorable because it's self-serving. So his decision to protect her honor over his own would be seen as, like, heroic of him, at least to himself.
I mean, you know, but it would definitely be a Ned Stark kind of choice.
Oh, for sure.
You know? Which is unfortunate because it's really short-sighted. But I guess that is something he learned from his father.
I just, Rob, this is so, it's so hard to read this part when you just, like, know everything. So let's see.
There's a suggestion that maybe Karr Stark's son will come back and sort of, like, bend the knee and realign with Rob in the north. And Rob is like, why though? I'm going to hang his father for treason. Why in the fucking world would he ever? And I'm not sure who it is. It might be the Blackfish. It have to be, I guess, because it's not fucking Edmure. Says that, you know, some fucking people, you know, don't know.
Right.
You know, don't mind that you kill their father or don't love their children, you know, their fathers or whatever. Sort of just being like, he would be so appreciative of being Lord now that he may, you know, come back to your side.
Right. And he's like, rightfully, even if he felt that way secretly, he cannot publicly be like, oh, hey, thanks to the guy who killed his dad. That's not how that's going to go, which is definitely true. I mean, I understand what he's saying.
Right, right.
It's just the PR of that, there's just only one way that you're going to handle that. Yeah. So come on.
And I love that it comes from his uncle, who is a Tully and not from, like, the North North, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like he doesn't really fully get what makes the North run.
Yeah.
You know, and what they value. And Rob has to point it out to him that, like, no, for these people, that's not going to fucking fly. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, this is when Edmure pops up and is like, we should pardon him then. And the idea of holding Karr Stark as a hostage and sort of being like, it could work, right? Mm-hmm. It could work. And Rob realizes that, nope, that's not going to be it either.
And before Rob is just flat out like, no, he asks his mom, like, so is your sister ever going to respond to me? And she's essentially like, no. And I've been saying no. Yeah. So I don't know why you keep thinking that answer's going to change just because you want a different one. But it's not. So let go, because that's what it looks like. She is a coward who doesn't want to get involved. And she's going to find every way to just sidestep getting involved.
Yeah. I love this, too, when their uncle, like, co-signs what Kat's saying about Lysa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the kind of woman she is. And that she's always been this way, you know, and that she will run and hide, has been the kind of person that runs and hides from when she was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, she ran from King's Landing to hide in the Vale after her husband was killed. And Rob at one point is like, well, look, we don't fucking need her to, like, join in, but if she will just open the gate and let us pass through, it would help our cause, you know, shorten our time of our travels and all that shit. And they have to tell him, yeah, no, she's not even going to do that. She's not letting any fucking army into her safe place.
Yep.
That's off the fucking table. Huh. And it's funny because we know as readers that at this point now, Baelish is on the way.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. On the way to see what he can do about that situation. And it's just, like, really frustrating as a reader to be like, there, you know, somebody is going to go and try to get Lysa on their side and appeal to her. And I don't know. Like, I guess they can't spare the people, the bodies, to make a trip as well to the Eyrie to try to talk to her face to face instead of sending, like, these ravens over and over and she's not answering.
Yeah, I feel like I want them to send Catelyn. Like, that would be a good way to sort of get her out of the situation as well, is to just be like, okay, I'm not, like, cutting her head off, but we are going to send her to the Vale and have her be, like, forced to deal with her sister.
Right. But, I mean, I know when she was there before with Tyrion, that didn't go great.
And I don't think it would work, but it would be a good way to sort of remove her, like, visually at least, from the equation. I feel like her being in the fucking throne room, standing free next to Rob in front of everyone, is adding salt to the wound here in a way that definitely could be avoided.
Definitely undermining Rob's authority by her presence. I agree that, like, sending her on an away mission probably is not the worst idea.
So Rob just is like, well, then fuck her. I can't believe anybody ever wants to be king. This is bullshit. I thought I knew who my friends and enemies were. Now it's all mixed up. I don't, like, my father's friend killed my enemies, and I have to kill him for killing my enemies. What the fuck is this? What are we even doing? Which is, like, a valid question, because
it really is.
Everything is just circular, and it's just fucking annoying.
Isn't there a little bit that Catelyn mentions where, when they first are in private, he takes off his little crown, and it's like left these marks on the side of his temple? Yep.
So this is when he says, I like to, will the Lannisters thank me for Lord Rickard's head? Will the phrase? No. Said Brendan Blackfish, blunt as ever. And this is when Edmure is like, which is exactly why you should keep him as hostage. And it's like too late. He's decided. And he puts his little crown back on. And it's just like, nah, he's got to die. I know what I said, but it doesn't change what I must do. In battle, I might have slain Tien and Willem myself, but this was no battle. They were asleep in their beds, naked and unarmed in a cell where I put them. Rickard Karstark killed more than a Frey and a Lannister. He killed my honor.
See? Mm-hmm. See? This is no good.
The honor is the weak spot.
Yep. And it's honor that you yourself have already threatened twice now, at least, Rob. Mm-hmm. At least twice, with the choice with your mother and a choice with your marriage.
Yep.
And yet, this threat from Karstark is so great that the only thing that you can do is kill him, because that's what honor dictates. And it's just, you know, just stunningly short-sighted. Mm-hmm. And it's an uncomfortable position to be in, to be like, you know what, I think Edmure's right.
Oh man, you know you gotta suck when somebody just hesitates to agree just because it's you saying it. But damn, oof.
Oh man,
yeah. So he goes out there, and it's absolutely pouring rain, and he's like, all right, dude, give me the fucking poleaxe, because I'm the one who's sentencing him, so I'm going to do it. And Lord Rickard Karstark dipped his head stiffly. For that much, I thank you, but for naught else. And then essentially is like, the Karstarks and the Starks are kin, going back a ways, yes, but still, and you are a kinslayer, and you are going to be fucking cursed, so enjoy your curse. And that's, look, I am not somebody who really believes in curses, but I'm just saying that if somebody on their deathbed, so to speak, curses me, I'm going to take that shit a little bit more seriously than I would somebody in the street just being like, may you die in a fire, you know, whatever. That just feels aggressive and like there's power behind it from their death that I don't want at all to be directed toward me.
And doesn't this chapter also open with the fact that Grey Wind is Rob's wolf, right? Is just howling
the whole time
because he's caged up at this point. And you know, I just feel like that's important for us to mention.
I hate that.
as these things continue to escalate and just go wildly off the rails for Rob, that his wolf is caged somewhere crying and howling for, you know, who knows what exactly. Catelyn says something like he can smell the blood and ruin. I think that's a bit much.
Look, it's a bit much right now. It's just, yeah.
But she's not 100% wrong. He can smell the blood and ruin, no doubt.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Okay. I mean, and the thing is, like, that probably is exactly it. Like, there's very clearly some sort of, like, link here with these wolves and the, like, the sixth sense of some kind, you know.
Right, right,
but
right.
Nevertheless, the flat-out saying of it in that manner feels so... it's just very melodramatic again.
Drama!
So, he kneels, and Rob has to strike three times in order to get his head to completely come off.
Yeah, kills him with the first whack, but it takes two more whacks.
And...
kill me and be cursed. You are no king of mine, are his last words. And I have to say, that's pretty gangster.
That is brutal. Just want to throw that out there. Like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Death curses. These books really are dovetailing nicely. Between the frozen wall and the giants, and now we got death curses.
Yep.
Who would have thought the Dresden and Song of Ice and Fire would go so well together?
So, unless the melodrama. So then, and like Rob is really covered in blood here too.
It's bad. It's just, so bad.
Yeah,
they're all covered in blood. Everybody who's standing there is just like fucking drenched in blood afterwards. And yeah, it says both the living and the dead were drenched in blood. Ugh.
I feel like later on, his wife comes to talk to Catelyn, and she says basically that he isn't, like, changing out of those clothes.
Yeah, he's just sitting in the soaking wet, bloody clothes, not speaking. She says he's, like, playing with his maps, like, drawing his little maps and everything,
mm-hmm.
but not speaking, and clearly, she calls him miserable, but I feel like that doesn't even really capture what he must be feeling. You know, when you think about who he just had to kill, is a man who was one of his father's best men that he's known his entire life, somebody that he's looked up to, somebody who was one of his, like, strongest and loudest supporters, mm-hmm. you know. And he had, like, his little, what he says about, like, being a king and how it sucks and that he has to kill him over the death of two people that Rob probably could have killed. You know, if the battle had gone differently.
Yep.
And it's clear that the value of these two little boys is nothing compared to the value of Karstark. Not just, like, friendship and family and support. And then, the literal things of, like, all the people that are fighting because Karstark said fight for Rob, you know.
Right.
The scales aren't even close to being balanced. And who is more important, who's worth more, you know, who you love more, all of that. It's like completely unbalanced. Mm-hmm. And yet he still goes through with it. I can imagine the feeling afterwards. I mean, and, you know, what if he doesn't do this? Is there a future for Rob as King of the North if he does not kill Karstark here?
Honestly, I don't think so, because the wheels are already in motion for the Red Wedding.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean, would the book be written differently? I just mean, like, if he doesn't kill Karstark, right? Because he's concerned about his honor and that I have to do this because, you know, this is what kings do, right?
Right.
What if he had just made a different choice? Would he have really lost? It's not like, I think I get stuck on the honor thing a lot because it doesn't exist in our world and the way it exists here.
Right.
Right. So when someone asks him, I forget who it is, if it's the Blackfish or Edmure, but when someone says, will Tywin in the phrase, like, thank me for this. Mm-hmm. And the Blackfish is like, nope. Rob, it's like he has to do this because this transgression happened on his watch. Mm-hmm. But I think of all the transgressions that are happening around the world that Rob doesn't know about. And how these other families are moving completely differently. You know?
Right.
And I just wonder, like, I guess that's the thing about the Starks, though. That's the thing about them, I guess, right? Is that they don't care how everybody else is moving.
That's the exact thing.
That's, my God.
Yeah, you could sit him down and show him what every single other decision being made was, and he would just look at you like, I don't understand why you think that's relevant. That's what he would do.
Wow. That is so wild. And, you know, I'm torn between, like, having a certain amount of admiration for being so true to, like, what your values are. Mm-hmm. And then the other half of me is just like, man, if you don't, mm-hmm. if you don't stop playing, oh.
Honestly, I feel like that's the attitude that everybody around Rob is feeling at this time. It's just like, dude, if you don't fucking figure out what this game actually is.
Like, you lost your father doing the same shit. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe because Rob isn't privy to, like, all the real shit that went down with his dad in King's Landing, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you lose your father in that way and then you just go and do the same shit. But I guess that's the fucking thing. You do what you're taught to do.
Yep.
You know, and if you can't fucking adapt and change when that shit is not working for you, my goodness. He never had a chance.
You're asking, like, would there have been anything for him if he made a different choice here? And I don't think so. I think that the way he is isn't compatible with success in this world. You know? I just don't think that there was another way this was ever going to go. And
that's such a shame.
Yeah, it sucks. He could... I do wonder, too, if he hadn't married this other girl, let's say, Catelyn frees Jaime, the Karstarks are mad about it, but he hasn't married this girl. That never happened. Probably he wouldn't have felt like he had to sort of forgive his mother as openly as he did because of his own mistake. He wouldn't mm-hmm. have killed her still, for sure.
Agreed.
But maybe he would have felt more free to make an example of her in some way that would have felt some kind of satisfying.
Right. He also could have let his men go after Brienne. And try to bring Jaime back, which he chooses not to do.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not even saying that his men would have necessarily been successful. I mean, like, I know that they sent some ships, right? They sent a couple ships after them, and that's when Brienne does the thing with the boulder,
right?
And then they just kind of like give up after that. Mm-hmm. But I think if he had allowed Karstark to take a group of men and like be dedicated to trying to track them down. Doesn't marry Jane and does something with his mom, you know, to where she's punished, if not, you know, not fatally.
Right.
He could have turned some of this stuff around.
I think so. That's interesting, the idea of, like, having him send men to track down Jaime. Like, I wonder, I can't decide if they would be open to that or if they would feel resentful about being sent to, like, clean up her mess instead of continuing to fight in the battle.
I think Karstark wanted... I think the real question is, what do you let Karstark do if they find Jaime and Brienne? Because he wants to kill that motherfucker.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
He wants him dead, right? So trying to get Karstark to be satisfied with bringing Jaime back alive because they want him as a hostage would have been the real sort of test. But I think with their history as a family, he may have been able to convince Karstark to bring Jaime back in chains.
Hmm.
Let us hold him like we said we were going to do just before my mom went off and did that her own shit. You know, right. So they're sort of back at square one where they were.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I am curious to hear from people what y'all think, though, because this is sort of what if situation I always find interesting, because you got to keep in mind that people are who they are, and mm-hmm. to a degree they're just going to keep making very similar decisions. But if certain things hadn't happened, there's still a chance, you know. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I am so confused about what's going on with. Then it comes up a little bit in the next chapter. With fucking Bolton.
Yeah.
I know, again, from the show that he, at least on the show, what they did is they had him be the traitor for the Red Wedding, right? Mm-hmm. I think I already said that I don't know if Bolton will be the traitor in the books, or if that was a thing the show did to combine a character that I had maybe wasn't not included on the show, you know?
Right.
But at this point, Bolton is still supporting the North. He's still a Northman and still, like, what the fuck do you call it?
Loyal? Allied?
Loyal. Fucking Jesus Christ. Is loyal to Robb Stark. So at this point, Robb still feels much stronger than it turns out he might actually be.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Is my point, right? Mm-hmm. So at least, even though things are looking bad for Robb at this point in the story, he's still in a stronger position than it turns out. He thinks he's still in a stronger position than it turns out he's in. So he could have made a choice that's different than what he made because he thinks he's, you know, in a better seated than he actually is.
Right.
I don't know. It's just it's also really difficult to read these knowing what's coming and trying to wish it goes a different way.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like reading it and being like, oh, God, no, don't do that. No, please don't do that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But 100%. It's done.
She said resignedly. Yeah. That's just, yeah.
Catelyn's advice to Jane is just like, be there and be quiet.
Basically. And I mean, to a point, that is good advice when somebody is just going through the worst things.
Mm-hmm,
sometimes mm-hmm. you just have to shut the fuck up. And that's like the only thing that is going to be supportive is like giving them the space. So I get it, but also it's just kind of like, oh, boy.
I love when she's like, it would have been easier if he had just let, you know, a headsman do it. Don't you agree? God. And
Cat's like, I mean, yes, I do agree, but that's the point. It's not supposed to be. And I love when she says their father taught them that, like, taking a life should not be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane just says, oh, and then changes the subject. Like, that's just so not something that she understands that she just kind of immediately gives up on attempting to, like, wrap her head around it. Ah, Jane.
That's funny. When she says, oh, like that, I thought it was more like she was embarrassed because, taking a life shouldn't be easy. And, like, you should be embarrassed for thinking it should be.
Maybe. It felt for me like she was just going, like, I guess, and then just change the subject because clearly, like, we don't agree, so I'm not going to pursue this.
I mean, it definitely, like, from where she's from, like, Jane is, you know, from the South and sort of, you know, aligned with the Lannisters and all. I think that they would think that is, like, barbarian, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. just like, and they kill the people with their own hands. Can you get over it?
Oh, God.
Like, they were white after Labor Day. It's so tacky. God. Like, that kind of energy.
They were white after Labor Day. Ma'am. I would love if we had, like, a sort of rewrite on some of this, like a fanfic where it's all really petty, silly shit that they disagree on. That'd be kind of fun, lighten it up a little bit. And so, yeah, Jane's like, and when she says, please, you're his mother, tell me what I should do. And Catelyn is just thinking about how she would really love to ask her father that question if he were awake and able to actually answer her. And then, as you say, just be there for him, be patient. And it says the young queen listened raptly, which I really appreciate how, like, young she's depicted as here. She is asking advice with a genuine, like, I want to be a good wife. Tell me, and I will drink mm-hmm. in every piece of advice you give me, because I don't know. Because why would she know? Like, honestly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's just something so earnest about her that I kind of like here.
Yeah. She, the way she just jumps up and she's just like, you know. And she says, I should get back. He might have missed me.
And I'm like, nah, bitch, he did not miss you. He didn't mm-hmm. even notice you were gone. He was probably low-key relieved that you had left the room.
And then she, you know, she tells Kat that she's going to take her advice and be patient. And then she goes to leave, and Catelyn is like, oh, wait, by the way, you should really hurry up and get pregnant, because we need to have a kid.
I can't.
And then it gets really weirdly awkward in a way I wasn't really expecting. Like, and it just, she's like, yeah, we work on it every day, sometimes twice.
Bitch. You didn't need to do all that.
And I don't know, it was not being prudish or anything. I just was not expecting that to be the next bit of this conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that is supposed to kind of, like you were just saying, how young she is, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And this is just sort of a, like, a more seasoned woman would have known not to really just blurt that out, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Someone that was a little bit older and understood how these conversations and how you're supposed to behave and what you're supposed to talk about with your fucking mother-in-law. And that she is just, like, this really earnest young woman. And she's like, oh, yeah, we're fucking as much as we can.
Non-stop.
Trying to get that baby, you know?
It is just a fuck fest over here.
And then, you know, it is like, oh, and if you could pray about our fucking, too, that would be super helpful.
And she says, my mother makes a posset for me, herbs and milk and ale to help make me fertile. I drink it every morning. And this is one of those moments where I just kind of go,
I'm like, that. What if that is just like doing the opposite? What if they have no intention of her getting pregnant and she is drinking some kind of, you know, contraceptive type of drink, you know?
I think that's some a sort of prophylactic possibility. Yeah.
Because that's what I thought of when I read it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like, what? Yeah, question marks. Lots of question marks for me on that. Okay, so then we have her thinking about the fact that she had said she might name, if they have twins, Eddard and Brandon, and maybe a Hoster. Would you like that? She says to her father, who her father is like on the verge of death, and the maester is basically like, he's fighting this battle, but he really needs to like put down his sword and...
Yeah.
And yield. And she's like, are you still talking about my dad? Or are you trying to say something about my son?
Yeah, I look at what you said earlier about, like, her internal monologue and how everything just comes back to that.
Yeah.
To her and her children. There's a... When Jane comes and asks Catelyn, she's like, you know, tell me what I should do to help Rob. Catelyn thinks to herself, you know, like you said earlier, she would like to ask her dad.
Mm-hmm.
But then right after she says she'd like to ask her father, she goes, you know, he's almost gone. And then she goes, oh, and Ned's gone, and Bran's gone, and Rickon's gone, mm-hmm. and Mother's gone, and Brandon's... lady. It's really hard to be in her brain right now. These POVs are really difficult. Yep. God damn, it is a horror show in her head. Jesus Christ.
So then we go to Jamie.
I'm sorry, y'all, but my God. Like, it is. Holy shit. Her, yeah. Whew. Jamie.
So they have been riding through a lot of burnt, abandoned areas. They don't see any people. And it says at Maiden Pool, Lord Mouton's red salmon still flew above the castle on its hill, but the town walls were deserted, the gates smashed, half the homes and shops burned or plundered. They saw nothing living but a few feral dogs that went slinking away at the sound of their approach. The pool from which the town took its name, where legend said Florian the Fool had first glimpsed Jonquil bathing with her sisters, was so choked with rotting corpses that the water had turned into a murky gray-green soup.
Blech.
Hate it.
Jamie takes one look and bursts into songs because he is a mess.
He is, though.
He is just a mess of a human being.
Ugh, that is the right way to describe him. A mess of a human being. I mean, also, I just wanted to point out, too, the mention of Jonquil, because this is the thing that fucking Sansa and what's his name are always referencing.
Right. Dantos?
That's the one. Yeah. Six maids there were in a spring-fed pool. What are you doing? Brienne demanded. Singing. Six maids in a pool? I'm sure you've heard it. And shy little maids they were, too, rather like you, though somewhat prettier, I'll warrant. Be quiet. And Cleos is like, Sir, Lord Mouton is sworn to River Run. We don't want to draw him out of his castle. Cleos, you think he's in there? What?
There may be enemies hiding in the rubble, he says.
I mean, you know, like, I don't know. For all I know, they are in there. But it was a surprising fear to have, in my opinion.
Considering the description we just got. Mm-hmm. But, when he says that there might be, enemies hiding, and Jamie just like, well, I don't know, hers or ours, because it's not the fucking same.
Right. I don't know, maybe the fact that his, like, banner is still flying is meant to indicate that he's definitely still there. Maybe I'm making a mistake on this, assuming that if the town's abandoned, it means the castle's abandoned. I don't know.
My assumption, when they say that they don't see anybody and everything, it looks pretty fucking abandoned. I feel like there's no reason to doubt that.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely a threat was lurking, but it doesn't come from the castle and it's not, you know, Lord Mouton's people or his men, so. Though, they probably should have been quieter, just on GP. So I'm not really mad about that part. He should be quiet. They're trying to sneak somewhere. He just bursted into song all loud and shit.
So, then we go to the attack. And
The attack from the Brave Companions?
No. The what do you call it?
Archers. Just,
Remember that?
Do the archers come first?
Before the Brave Companions?
No, before her and Jamie have their little sparring match.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because they're still arguing about drawing attention. And, There's a sort of interlude of him thinking about his sister and the fact that, like, they had been discovered
fooling around
with each other. And that there's a servant who caught them, and their mother sends the servant away so that she can't talk. God knows what she did. Maybe killed her. And then moves Jaime's bedchamber to the other side of the castle, put a guard outside of Cersei's, and tells them they must never do that again or she would have no choice but to tell their lord father. And she wound up dying in childbirth, which makes me wonder if she had stayed alive, what would have happened.
I like the way that he remembers this. As he goes, they need not have feared, though, because she died pretty soon. It's not, like, framed in any sort of kind of sentimental way that you think it would be when you think about your mother dying. Mm-hmm. But then he says, you know, he barely remembered what his mother looked like. So it's made very clear that it doesn't seem like Jaime has a real, like, connection with his mother. No. It doesn't seem like her death is... The fact that she died doesn't cause him, like, any real pain. It's just, like, something that happened when he was little and barely remembers it now.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of a weird moment, too, because, like, he has this thing of, well, they spread the rumor about our incest so far and wide that it barely matters now. Like, at least it's out in the open. Because he seems to think that they're not going to try and contest that rumor.
Yeah, he's thinking to himself, that, like, fuck it, they can just get married now and rule together as brother and sister and dare anybody to say a thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And why can't we do that? Targaryens did it for centuries, and, you know, it doesn't matter what people think as long as you have the power to make it not fucking matter what people think.
Mm-hmm.
Which he is not 100% wrong in general about how that works.
This is sort of interesting, actually, because Austin has sent me some notes. And he says, it should be noted the realm did have a big problem with the Targ sibling marriage thing. It took 50 years into Targ rule for the Faith and the Crown to come to an agreement on the issue, with the Crown promising to give the Faith more autonomy, and the Faith basically saying, they have dragons, they can do whatever they want. It should also be noted, following the death of their dragons, the Targs largely gave up on marrying within the family. It was only Dany's father and grandfather that brought back the practice. Prior to that, there was almost a century of Targaryen monarchs and princes and princesses marrying into other noble families.
Oh.
So I thought that was interesting because I know that there's, like, so much history out there in the, like, Fire and Blood books, whatever they're called, World of Ice and Fire, and I couldn't remember exactly how this went. So knowing that it had just been kind of not a thing for quite a while gives it a slightly mm-hmm. different flavor, you know?
It does. It does. I thought that was something they practiced all the way to the what would be for us, you know, current times. I didn't realize there had been a drop off in that behavior, especially because it just keeps coming up so often about how the Targaryens married their siblings. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, I just assume that's just how they did it the whole time. And then finding out that it comes back with Dany's father, who was the Mad King, it really does take a little bit of the sort of, like, everybody was fine with it when it was the Targaryens doing it. It really does dismantle that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, her father and her grandfather, which might be part of the deal with her father being fucking not completely there. But
he's even thinking about, like, marrying Joffrey to the sister.
Yeah, Marcella. Yeah. Sir. Slow down.
Yeah. That would show the realm that, like, the Lannisters are above their laws. Like gods. Sir.
I don't know why I find that so funny, but there really is something about that just being like, that'll show them. Like,
my favorite thing of the whole chapter is what happens next when he explains, you know, that he had decided that when he gets to King's Landing, he is going to return Sansa to Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only going to do it because no one expects him to do it because he's so fucking dishonorable.
I love it.
That it amuses him to keep, like, his part of the deal.
Truly, I love it. That is just such a fucking mood, in my opinion. I, the idea of just doing something out of spite, I can't relate more. Yep. Good call. And I would love to see it. I would love to see it. So, okay, so he's having all these thoughts, and then They were riding past a trampled wheat field when Jamie heard a soft thrum from behind as if a dozen birds had taken flight at once. And he knows exactly what the fuck that sound is and immediately yells down. And his horse gets hit in the rump. Sir Cleos, like, gets tangled up in his stirrup and his horse runs off and his head is just bouncing.
This is a terrible end. Yeah. This is a terrible way to go.
Ugh. And it says Jamie, she was still a horse, an arrow lodged in her back and another in her leg, but she seemed not to feel them. I would like to for everybody to keep in mind about the fight that the two of them are in later, because people are always trying to say Jamie's a better sword fighter than Brienne because he almost beat her even though he was shackled. This bitch had two arrows in her before the fight started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So mm-hmm. I am just saying they were both a little handicapped here.
A little bit.
And mm-hmm. I am not convinced that he is better than her at this. I think he's known for it because he's allowed to fight in a way she's mm-hmm. not, and mm-hmm. that's that. Mm-hmm. So, and just the fact that it's just like she didn't seem to feel them. I mean, what a boss. Are you kidding? I get shot. I don't care where I'm shot. You could have shot me just like through the like dangly skin on my fucking arm. And I'm just going to be down. Okay. You got me. Come take me away. So at this point, he turns around.
This is so good.
And he just fucking charges. Right at he's just like, hopefully they can't see that I'm shackled.
Hopefully Brienne catches up.
Yep. And he, like, he sees them break and run. And she sort of reins up and he's like, what the fuck? And she says, well, they're running. And he's like, yeah, which is the best time to kill them. Which honestly is the whole difference between the two of them. It's so good. I love it. And then he says, let me, like, tend your wounds. And she's like, you? And he says, you see anybody else? Yeah, me. And then they go and find Sir Cleos and his whole head is
Jamie is like, well, I guess he won't be needing any of this shit anymore. Let me get that sword. And she is watching. She cannot believe how he is behaving. And she's just like, but that was your cousin. And Jamie is just like, well, he was. And also, I have lots of fucking cousins. And she can't, she's just like, how can you be this terrible? She can't wrap her head around it. You know, like, she just is, like, a legit question. Like, just how are you so awful? And, he offers to, once he has the sword that he thinks that she's going to let him have from Cleos, he's like, yeah, I can help you stay and watch. And she's like, yeah, no. No,
what we're not going to do is have me go to sleep and you standing over me with a fucking weapon, but thanks right? for the offer.
So he's still running through Cleos's pockets and she ends up telling him, you need to, like, back away. Stop all this that you're doing. Stop that. Step away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, then the next thing you know, they fighting.
Yep. Yeah, because it's like, she could have, like, come forward and stopped him, but she knows that she's not supposed to hurt him, mm-hmm. which is sort of hindering her. I'm like, girl, you just hurt him. Just go ahead and hurt him. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, no. And then he just starts to get so irritated. It says, Jamie was tired. Tired of her suspicions. Tired of her insults. Tired of her crooked teeth and her broad, spotty face and that limp, thin hair of hers. Ignoring her protests, he grasped the hilt with both hands, held the corpse down, pulled, and as the blade slid free, he was already pivoting. And I love this. It says, somehow Brienne had gotten her own blade out in time. Somehow, Jamie.
Somehow. Magic.
Somehow. It's almost, it's an accident. It's such luck. No.
Right.
She's good at this, sir, and you're about to find out. And what we get then is this long fight that is really, it's sort of compelling because of how much fun he's having and being in his head when he is just like, yes, this is it.
Yeah, this is what I was born to do. You know, never feels more like himself, never feels more like in sync with the world around him than when he is fighting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when people, this is what I hear anyway, when you're doing like the thing that you know you were put on this earth to do, that just like there's no feeling that's like it. There's no doubt, you know, everything is just like locked into place. This is how he is feeling when he is fighting. He's just the best Jamie he could be.
So,
and the entire fight, every time she does anything that's really impressive, he's just like, pretty good for a wench.
It's so annoying.
But I like the way it, like, it progresses, because at one point he's like, not bad at all. And she says, for a wench. And he goes, for a squire.
A new squire, you know, not like a good squire.
Not a really good one. One, like, first, second day on the job.
Ugh, hate him so much. And then finally, he starts to get tired. She's stronger than I am. Mm. The realization chilled him. Robert had been stronger than him, to be sure. The white Bill Gerald Hightower as well in his heyday, and Sir Arthur Dayne. Amongst the living, Great John Umber was stronger. Strongbore of Crakehall, most likely. Both Cleganes, for a certainty. The mountain's strength was nothing human. It did not matter. With speed and skill, Jamie could beat them all. But this was a woman. A huge cow of a woman, to be sure, but even so. By rights, she should be the one wearing down. And...
but instead...
Yep. She is just coming at him really hard. And eventually, he tries to, like, because they're on top of each other. Because he slips and, like, pulls her down. And he's trying to get her dagger, and she's fucking wise to that, and grabs his face with one hand and grabs his hand with the other and slams his hand back so bad that he thinks that she may have dislocated his arm, and holds his head underwater and says, yield or I'll drown you. And finally lets him go.
He says, you're gonna, because he says, what, and break your oath like me? And then she lets him go because she's not gonna do that.
Brienne,
and yeah,
just say yes.
Yeah,
just say yes.
Yeah,
what's he gonna
again,
do?
Honor bound, you know, like she's alone with him in the woods, she could say anything happened.
Mm-hmm.
No one even has to know that she broke her oath. But that's the thing about, like, being honorable,
I don't
right?
even mean, like, no, like, say yes because you're going to do it. Tell him yes. Just be like, you were trying to kill me. Changes the situation. Just let him think that your honor is a little bit conditional on your own life. It's fine. Let him think that.
There's some wiggle room there.
Exactly. You know, it's just, I don't know. I felt like she was being... too transparent here. You can have your honor and keep that shit a little to yourself. I don't
know. No, they never can, though. They never can. That's the thing about that whole thing, is it has to be, like, announced, apparently, in this world. It has to be announced over and over again every 5 minutes to anybody who is listening.
I guess.
It seems like a real weakness. So, like, keep broadcasting how rigid your, you know, principles are, and that you can be backed into any number of situations and corners and be compromised because you have no flexibility, and that you are bound to this sort of a system of rules, even though nobody else is playing by the same rules you're playing by. Feels like something you wouldn't want to tell everybody on the first day.
I agree.
But that's just me.
I agree. So as she finally lets him go, there's this laughter and clapping, and there are some very coarse-looking men who have been watching the progress of their fight.
Yeah.
And these dudes are immediate bad news. Jamie is looking at them and is like, the fucking Brave Companions. Fucking Christ. Yeah.
And not only does he know them, but they fucking know who he is.
Yep.
Which is, I think, unexpected for all of us as we were reading. And... yeah, somebody is like, yeah, it fucking takes more than a beard and a shaved head, like, to pretend like you don't know, we don't know who the fuck you are. Mm-hmm. But, like, it had been working just fine.
Just like, Kim, it does? Yeah. Damn.
And these guys, like, the first thing they say out loud after laughing is that, yeah, we're here for the rape.
Yep.
It's the first thing they say out loud. She tries to, like, begin to bribe them, I think. She starts to talk about how much money she has. Mm-hmm. And
they're like, oh, yeah, we'll have that, too.
No.
But that's not what we're after.
Well, yeah. Then we'll have your cunt. It can't be as ugly as the rest of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about rape in the next couple pages, folks.
A lot. Fair so, warning. TW. But yeah, it's a... And the way they talk about it is so, like, dehumanizing and horrible. Mm-hmm, it's real. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's... obviously, rape is always dehumanizing, but there are people who attempt to sort of couch what they're doing in language that makes it seem like it's not rape or it's not as bad as... the kind of rape that other people mean. And these mm-hmm. guys have no compunction whatsoever about being like, oh, no. Rape. Absolutely. That's what we're doing. That's mm-hmm. what we do. Mm-hmm. I don't... what is the problem? That's the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And talking about it... talking about something that's violent is rape. That doesn't have anything to do with attractiveness. And then couching it in... well, you're so ugly, but we're not going to let that keep us from raping
mm-hmm,
you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these are the things that we'll do. We'll, you know, take you from behind so we don't have to look at your face, you know. Yeah.
Ugh. Yep. Yep. And then at this point, Jamie is like, oh, man, look, I don't like this bitch, but she does deserve better than to be gang raped by these pieces of shit. And he tries to do the whole, like, well, I'm a Lannister, you guys are Lannister bannermen, we can work a little deal out, we pay our debts. And one of them is, like, grinning at him in this way, mm-hmm. and he's like, I don't like that face, what is that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And finally, he tells them, oh, the new Lord of Harrenhal, Vargo Hoat, is actually not with you guys anymore. We traded our lion pelts for wolf skins.
Yep.
We now serve Lord Bolton and the King in the North. Which is so confusing.
Yeah.
There's just so much backstabbing going on, you know?
You know, and Jamie replies basically like, and people always got shit to say about my fucking honor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he also tells them, you know, when he's trying to broker this deal, mentions that, you know, Brienne is highborn and going to also be worth a lot of money if they don't, you know, harm her too terribly.
Right.
They could probably sell her for a pretty good ransom. Finding out that these men are serving the North makes Brienne believe that if she just explains what her mission is, then they will be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts to talk to them about how Catelyn has sent them to get the girls, and if they would just listen, they do not listen.
No.
And they end up just beating the shit out of her. But it takes four of them to fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's bad.
She loses they a couple beat her. Teeth.
Yeah. Jamie says that her face was as swollen and bloody as his must have been. And they're both just, you know, they're beaten to shit. And they're just sort of sitting there while these men are planning to what? Take them back to where this Vargo Hold is, mm-hmm, I guess? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So, this is, let's see, I'm trying to find, okay, yeah, here it is. The Dornishmen bound them back to back atop Brienne's plow horse while the other mummers were stripping Cleos Frey to his skin to divvy up his possessions. I hope you're pleased, wench, Jaime whispered. If you'd armed me, we'd never have been taken. And I'm just like, come on, man. Yeah, you would. I mean, come on. Look, and she doesn't answer, and he thinks she's really fucking stubborn, but I gotta hand it to her. She is really brave. I can't even deny that as much as I would like to.
And then he tries to warn her about what's going to happen tonight at camp and tells her that it'd be better for her if she doesn't resist. That don't fight, horn. Just take it. Oh, yeah, my fire horn.
Sorry, guys.
And she says, is that what you would do if you were a woman? Just take it, not resist.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks, the first thing he thinks is that if he were a woman, he'd be Cersei. And then he says that, which is the first thing his mind does.
So weird.
It's so weird.
I mean, I get it. I understand why. But it's just like reading how much she is always on his mind in this sort of way is odd.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He says out loud, though, if I were a woman, I'd make them kill me.
Yeah.
Which he's admitting that he would not take the advice that he's giving her.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you even give it to her then?
Because he doesn't think that she is of the same cloth that he is. He, even after having fought her and seeing what she is made of in that respect, he still, I think, either underestimates her or he thinks that because she's a virgin and seems like so innocent in so many ways that she will have a worse time than he would have had were he in the same position.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? That's my guess. But yeah, I just think that he really believes like, well, I am very, very, very cool. So no, I would not have just taken it, but that's also because I am extremely cool and I don't do things the way that other human beings should do things because I'm very special and cool.
Yeah, he definitely does think that he is a, and he's not 100% wrong, but definitely thinks that he is particularly special, you know, thinks of himself as such an outlier that it doesn't occur to him that someone like her, like Brienne, would also rather die than be gang raped. Then Jaime decides that he wants to go and talk to the head guy, whose name is Erswick. And tries again to be like, it's not too late. You can come back to my father's side.
Yeah, and they're just like, all right. Erstwick slapped him lazily across the face. The sheer casual insolence of it was worse than the blow itself. He does not fear me, Jaime realized with a chill. I've heard enough, Kingslayer. I would have to be a great fool indeed to believe the promises of an oathbreaker like you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when Jaime is like, God fucking damn it. No matter what I do, it always comes back to fucking Aerys. And I can't imagine how galling that would be, honestly. Knowing what we know about why he did what he did. It's just so infuriating.
Yeah, and he can't get away from it. Yep. And people keep having these... what it's done is it's made a lot of people think that they know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they don't 100% know who he is based on this one act, you know.
Yep.
This thing that you can have one action that so completely defines you that it's impossible to show people who you really are because they're so sure they already know.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that there we have all kinds of parallels, you know, today when you think about celebrity. But being world famous for what looks like the worst thing you've ever done, but you privately know that it was a great sacrifice and that you saved millions of people.
Yep.
But no one knows about that part of it. And when you have an ego like Jamie, it is especially galling.
Yeah. Listen, I have said before, there's a character in a book that I covered, and I can't remember if I have mentioned this before, but basically there she had the choice between dooming her kingdom and saving her ego by, like, dooming them because she refused to do XYZ, or saving all of these people but dying and everyone thinking that she was a petty coward. And she decides to die and let everybody think she was a petty coward, and they never know that what she did saved them all. And so she goes down in history as this sort of pitiful creature. I'll be honest, I couldn't do it. I would love to be able to put the welfare of all of these people ahead of my ego. I just don't think I could do it. Knowing that I'm just going to be seen forever from that point onward as the one who did the pitiful, sad thing that sort of in a lot of ways justifies, like, it's meant to be held up to justify misogyny later on, because it's supposed to be that she did this stupid thing because she fell in love with a man and grew weak because of this love for this man. I just, I don't know, kids, you know? So it's, I really like admire that, the sacrifice of your ego for this sort of thing, but I have a big ego. Surprising nobody.
It's like the old game of, like, would you rather, you know, actually be in a relationship with, like, the hottest celebrity crush you can think of, but no one can know? Or you can have a very well-known but not relation, or you can have millions of people think you're in a relationship with a really well-known hot person, but really you're not. So which would you prefer? The actual relationship, but no one can know about it, so you don't get any of, like, the benefits, or having everybody think you're doing this thing and enjoying all the benefits of everybody thinking you're doing this thing, but actually you're not really with that person? They don't love you, you don't love them, and there's, like, you're just alone.
What would you pick?
Oh, it depends on the day. It really does depend on the day. But mostly, because of the way I'm built, I would just rather have the relationship and, like, nobody know about it.
I would rather have people think it, but it not be true, because I could turn that to my advantage with the podcast. So, you know what I mean?
So you could then use it to, yeah, well, that's part of the question. You could turn it, you know, you could use it to make yourself famous by extension and reap all the benefits of that.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I feel like it's the kind of thing that I don't really, like, look, I get the appeal of just, like, oh, I would love to fuck this super hot celebrity. But I have to be honest, I have fucked super hot people, and it's not that great. It's fine. I just don't really expect anybody that is just, like, looks the way that some of these people look to be that good in bed, because they don't have to be good in bed, and they've never had to be good in bed, and it's just, who cares? And those, like, celebrity relationships, I mean, no. But if I can get the publicity out of it, yeah, I'll do that. Absolutely.
It's funny, because this sort of question is the kind of thing that used to happen before, like, social media was a thing, so I didn't really don't think of it in that context of how does an average person use the notoriety of supposedly being in a relationship with this, like, super famous person. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, now in the world we live in, that could absolutely be to much more of an advantage.
Yeah.
Because back in when I was little, okay, so you go on a bunch of talk shows and tell people that you're sleeping with so-and-so, and then that's it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was, like, the height of your success.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe you wrote a book, you know? Maybe you write, like, a tell-all book or something, but it doesn't turn into a cottage industry that you can then maintain just based on that, you know? But now it's a whole different world.
Yep. Yeah, so that's my very cynical decision. It's fine. And then I could just, like, stay with Owen. That's great. I could still be with the men I actually love.
But that would have to be a secret.
All right.
Owen and your love for Owen and all that would have to be secret, because you have to maintain the idea
that you are in this very serious relationship with this other person.
I think I could deal with that because, honestly, I should probably be less public about my actual real relationship than I was the first time anyway, since that didn't go super well. So maybe it would be a good thing for both him and I if I just learned to keep my mouth shut a tiny bit more than last time.
Fair enough. You know?
But anyway, so kids, that's the mind twister for today. What's your answer? Share in the comments in the old Discord and let us know what you would do. All right, so.
My God.
What?
I'm sorry. I hadn't thought about that in so long. How old? The question was like Marilyn Monroe. That's like, for how young I was when I read it. It was like, would you rather fuck Marilyn Monroe and nobody can know about it? Or would you rather everybody think you fucked her, but you really didn't? That was like the question.
So who do you think would be the person today that everybody would be like, here's the one?
Oh, girl, I don't know. Don't put me on a spot like that. I don't know.
I don't know any fucking, like, you know, the women all that I want to talk about are the women who were the it girls in the 90s and 2000s. I want to say Halle Berry or Selma Hayek. Yeah. And it's past their time, ladies. I'm sorry, and I don't make the rules. I think that you're still all super hot and it's not actually past your time, but you know what I mean, unfortunately. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea who's like hot right now. You know, I know who looks good in some of the movies. Like, even the people I would name, I think is dated. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, fucking Chris that plays Thor.
Chris Hemsworth?
Yes, that one. But even that is like 10 years old at this point.
Zoe Kravitz?
He's still fine as fuck. He's still as fuck. Don't get it twisted. But Zoe Kravitz is like not even a real person. I don't think it's fair to even consider her in our hypothetical.
She is
beyond gorgeous. It's like she is from another planet, and how dare she be walking around.
She looks like she was like created in a lab.
She really does. It is bananas how perfect she is. I can't fucking stand it. It makes me so angry. Like, what the fuck, universe?
So wait, if you're listening, it's nothing personal, but we hate your guts.
We really do. Like, oh my God, she's so beautiful and just like has the nerve to be like talented also. Mm-hmm. And from all accounts, a pretty cool chick on top of everything else. Ma'am, how dare you? How dare?
Although there was some shit she said recently that got her in some hot water and she kind of had to go.
Oh no, I don't want to hear it.
Hiding.
I don't want to. Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
I don't even really remember what it was. So it's fine. But yeah,
don't tell us in the comments either, unless it was really awful.
Oh, you know what? I don't remember what it was. I won't tell you, but now I remember what it was. And it's like, it's one of those things that it's like not a good stance, but it's also not so like intense and aggressive a thing that I feel like it's worth being. I just don't fuck with her at all anymore. I get not liking it, and if you do decide not to fuck with her anymore, that's completely your prerogative. That's fine, but it's not something that I think that you would be like, oh god damn it, now she's ruined forever kind of thing, you know?
Oh, okay, all right.
But I might be wrong. Maybe you'd hear it and you'd just be like, wow, really? You know, and that would be
now like, now I'm all curious.
I'm sorry.
All right, so okay, let's try to bring this back in a little bit.
Yes,
here.
Yes. Okay, so this is when she says, oh yeah, because he tries to like throw around the fact that the place that she comes from is called the Sapphire Isle.
Yeah.
And she's like, why did you tell him that? It's about the water. He's not rich. God. And he's like, oh my
what
God.
Is she doing? This is, I cannot even get over how bad this is. I don't understand why she doesn't understand what's happening. Is she not smart? What is happening? I guess she's just so unused to lying that it's so foreign to her. My God.
I think there's almost maybe a part of her that's like, well, why would you lie to this guy? Because he's going to find out you were lying eventually anyway, without really thinking about like Well, even if he did find out we were lying, mm-hmm. what the fuck is he going to do about it by then, right. you know?
Also, I think the idea that Jamie is doing something that's trying to help her and save her, she is just like, it doesn't occur to her that he would be doing something that was for her benefit, because that's how little she thinks of
that's
him.
That's a really good point. She doesn't think
that he's even capable,
yeah.
you know, of trying to be, like, helpful, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to do something to save her. That she's just like, yeah, why would you do that?
That never occurred to me, but that is probably, like, more than anything what's going on here. It's just being like, I mean, I don't see yeah. why you would, because you're a piece of shit who doesn't care about anybody but yourself. So clearly there's mm-hmm, something mm-hmm. nefarious here, that you're promising him this, like, yeah. prize that
yep,
I'm
yep.
going to get in trouble for not being able to deliver on or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. Mm. And then she also, when she asks him, she's just like, is everything you say a fucking lie? Yeah, she does not get what he's trying to do here, and it is because she doesn't think he's capable of it.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, yeah. It's great that comes right after what he's thinking to himself before they start sparring, which is that, you know, she's so suspicious. Everything I do and say, you know, she looks at as though I can't be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And she still is doing exactly that. Because, sir, you don't have a reputation that says you deserve to be trusted.
Mm-hmm. Look, it's not her fault, Jamie. She was raised with a value system that you clearly mm-hmm. were not. And that has some consequences for both of you. What can you do?
Yeah. And he is, like, at this point, just like, say that shit a little bit louder and maybe the rapes will start sooner. And I think he says something that really, like, gross to her. Oh, no, he says, pretend that they're all Lord Renly.
Yeah, shut your eyes and, open your legs and pretend they're all a Lord Renly.
Oof. And that kind of, that, she doesn't say anything else after that. At least to him, to Jamie in that moment. Mm-hmm. And then they get to, they're not going to Heron Hall, but they get to wherever fucking this guy, what's his name?
Vargo Hoat. Goat?
The one, yeah, that's, Jamie keeps calling him the goat.
Yeah. He doesn't like it. Don't do it.
I forgot. We met him before.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot how he, about the lisp.
Yeah. You should listen to the audiobook.
I would rather not. I really would rather not.
It is really something. He just decided that he was going to, like, do that lisp, and he was going to really go for it. Not even just him, either. The other dude is really done in, like, a slobbery nasal sort of voice that is really hard to listen to.
The Urswick guy?
Yeah.
Ugh. It's a thing that sometimes we do with our villains, right? Is we have to, like, how do we know this is a bad guy? Oh, let's make them sound all fucked up when they speak. Mm-hmm. That'll do it. You know,
yep.
it's kind of ableist, yeah, in a way, is. Right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that's just a thing overall a lot of the time. Is like, we're going to have the villains be, you know, somehow, like, disfigured mm-hmm, as well mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. whatever. And I do think, like, the that's undermined a lot with having so many of the beautiful people in this series be also very awful. But there certainly are times where it feels like we are doing that. And it's just balanced out well enough that it doesn't bother me too much. But that's me. Okay, so this is when they reach the fucking sept that these guys have been pillaging. It's really bad.
They are digging the gems out of the little, like, idols that are placed around the set,
mm-hmm.
Taking the jewels out of the mother. One sept is hanging upside down from a tree. It's no good. It's no good at all.
Yeah, they've been using him as, like, an archery butt, so he's full of mm-hmm. arrows. I love that. It's, one of them must have been good. The dead man had arrows through both of his eyes. And there's just, like, this sort of begrudging, like, oh.
Fucking Jamie.
Oh, God. And this is when she yells out that she's, you know, Brienne of Tarth from Lady Catelyn, blah, blah, blah. Silence her. Silence her. I can't. Hear me in the name of the
king. The way he says Kingslayer.
Kingslayer.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God.
Like, this is such a choice that Martin made.
Mm-hmm.
But why?
This is a sweet day. You know, I kind of, like, there's a part of me that sort of enjoys it because oftentimes people with a lisp, it's just sort of either treated as like a straight up joke, like they are a joke for it, or it's gay men, which I don't know what the deal is with like the whole gay men have a lisp thing. I will just straight up say I've met a lot of gay men and nary a one of them had a fucking lisp. So I don't know what that's about. But there is something kind of fun about this guy having a lisp, which is like the kind of like speech impediment that can be seen as goofy. And instead, he's like a fucking serial killer, basically, which is sort of like more interesting, at least. But yeah. And this is, again, Jamie just being like, so my dad has lots of money and he'll give it to you and just make a deal with me. And he says, oh, yeah, no, I'll have half the gold of Catherly Rock. But first, I must send him a message. It's fucking like... oh, my God.
Then he says something in what Jamie describes as his slithery, goatish tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Which clearly means it's an order he gives that Jamie does not understand. And, yeah, then the thing that happens, happens.
And Jamie the whole time thinks this is a bluff. Mm-hmm, he really mm-hmm. believes these men would never, which is wild because they have pulled up on these guys having wrecked a sept and, like, done God knows what to everybody inside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just can't with the fact that he is so certain he's untouchable. It's a really telling moment.
Yeah.
You know?
They want to scare me. They want to watch me piss my pants. I'll never give him the pleasure of doing that. And he's telling, Jamie is telling himself, reminding, you know, I'm a Lannister of Casterly Rock. I'm the Lord Commander of the High Guard. No sellsword would make him scream. And next thing you know, he's screaming.
Oh, he sure is. I just like, look, I'm not going to lie. There's a part of me that feels some satisfaction over the fact that he so misjudged this situation because, you know, he is the golden boy. And I mean, like, literally and figuratively, who has been able to just
see what get out did of there.
Everything. Yeah, you know, like, they've got gold and he has golden locks. But yeah, I just, there is something about how much of a shock it is that anything actually gets done to him that is both satisfying and really awful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I can't remember how it plays on the show, but that this moment comes, he loses his hand after he's just been fighting with Brienne. It's the first time he's had a sword in his hand in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just been reminded, you know, of his place in the world and what he does better than most people, you know?
Yeah.
And then within hours, like, before you know, and like, you know, I'm not sure how much time passes, but it doesn't seem like very much. And then he loses his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes it sting all the more.
Yeah. So that is the end of that chapter. Dun, dun, dun. And I feel like I'm just going to check the notes from Austin here. Let's see. Jamie and Brienne get taken prisoner by the Bloody Mummers. House Tarth is not unimportant, but seems to be middle class nobility, if such a thing exists. Here it is. Vargo Holt cuts off Jamie's hand. In the show, this is done by the O.C. Bolton follower, Locke, who him and his band take the place of the Bloody Mummers. That's what it is. Because I remember that the Bloody Mummers are not a thing in the show. And I couldn't remember exactly how all this went. But
is this, this is not in the show. Remember when they did the bear and the maiden fair thing in the show? Is that also around this time when he loses his hand, or does that come later?
I can't tell you.
Do you remember that?
Why are you asking me these questions?
Oh, yeah, you're not going to tell
why
me.
Why would I tell you anything about this? I know plenty already. I don't need to be giving you extras.
I forgot for a second who I was and what we were reading. Thought we were just having a conversation about some shit we like to read. My bad.
All right. So, I'm just trying to look ahead a little bit here. Okay, cool. I am going to greet new patrons, but before I do that, I just want to let everybody know that I have decided what Rashawn and I are going to be covering next after Dresden, because as most of you who are listening to Dresden, if you are not super far behind, are aware, we're coming up on the end of the most recently published book, so we are going to be caught up, which is wild. And because I was like really struggling with, I want to cover something. I want it to not be like just another white male writer. I also would like for it to not be too long so that it doesn't feel like we're watching one book after another get released by Dresden and we either have to like take a break or just wait a really long time to get around to the coverage. It was a tricky sort of thing that I was trying to do here, but I feel happy about the decision. So what we're going to cover next are the Ray Bearer and Redemptor books, which are by Jordan Ifueko, two book series. They're a YA series that is set in like an African kind of fantasy universe. It's really, really cool. And I am just super excited. I just finished the second book. I had read the first one on commission for Spoil Me and loved it and was thinking about going with it, but I didn't know if the second book kind of sucked or what. So I decided to get permission from the person who commissioned it to read it on my own. And I'm happy to say I loved the second one a lot. So I think it's going to be a really cool departure. And while it's not as hugely popular a series as, you know, a lot of the other stuff that I cover, because I try and do things that will draw new listeners, she did win several awards for the series. And it is like, it was something that when I was commissioned for it, I recognized the name. So it is out there. It's not like unpopular. It's just not quite the same kind of insane blockbuster success as like Harry Potter and Song of Ice and Fire. So I'm hoping that people who may not have picked those books up otherwise, seeing that we're covering them for the show, will encourage them to do it because they are very much worth your time, I think. So, that is what we are going to be doing following Ted Lasso, which is going to be what is the first thing to come up after Dresden Files. So,
I'm so excited about that.
Ted Lasso.
Yeah, the books too, but really, I'm really excited about Ted Lasso.
All right, and so, I have to say hi to my new patron, so everybody get ready for the dignified air horn. New patrons: Dana Isaac, A. Leonard, Matthew Ward, Pat Ban, and Brian. Hi, guys. Thanks so much for becoming patrons. I love you very much and appreciate you. And I just want to put out a special plea, I guess is the word I'll use. I have been really struggling lately, guys. There's been a drop in pledges. It's understandable considering the economy and inflation, and I definitely get it. I'm not, you know, I am not mad at anybody who has had to drop or lessen their pledge. But I know that there are a lot of folks out there who sort of sit on the fence as to whether or not they want to pledge at all. And I think that this is the time. If you're going to try and make it count, I need your help a lot right now. At the end of the Dresden recording that we did earlier this week, I basically was like, if I don't get enough pledges, I may have to start adding ads to the middle of the podcast, which I really don't want to do, but I've got to make up the difference somewhere here. So I'm blackmailing everybody by saying pledge or get ads. And I don't, you know, obviously want this. I could have added more ads a long time ago, and I haven't, because when I'm listening and there's an ad break, it sucks. And I understand why it's necessary, and I don't fault anybody for having ad breaks. You got to pay the bills. But I just don't enjoy it as part of a listening experience. So I don't want to do it to my listeners. But needs must. So I have been very lucky so far in being able to really manage just through Patreon and what I'm making with Spoil Me. But it's not maintaining its same, what's the word I want here? The total that I'm getting paid is not as high by several hundred dollars as it used to be. I think by about 500 at this point. And I am only having to spend more the more shows I do to maintain everything for the website, for supplies, for like paying for the hosting, which is for me now, it's like, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month because I have everything native on the website uploaded. So it's a lot of memory. And every time I add more, they have to up my memory and charge me for that. So there's just a lot of things. But really, what it comes down to is I really need your help. So if you are able to throw me $5 a month in exchange for 4 extra episodes a month that Miles and I are doing covering Mistborn, check us out. Patreon.com/unspoiled. I'm so mad. They just got into my head. I shared with you the like screenshot of Facebook's like notification, and they were like, upload your podcast directly to Facebook. And then I clicked it and it was giving me an error.
Yeah, you did.
These motherfuckers sent me a fucking email last week. Podcasts are going away. That's the way it was worded.
Why were they trying to upload? Wait, okay. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Yeah. So evidently, that shit wasn't working for a lot of people, is my guess. That they made a big announcement about how this was going to be the hot new thing and quickly realized that they weren't ready. They didn't know what they were. And I mean, they don't, because like I have at least like 1.5 terabytes of podcasts. So if you're ready to host all of that, I mean, okay. But yeah, so that was just amazing to me that they sent me this email after relentless notifications trying to get me to upload it. And I was just like, I mean, I don't plan on it, but I want to see what it's about, and clicking it and just nothing happened. But anyway, it's not Facebook. It's Patreon. Patreon.com/unspoiled. And every bit counts. I just like, I know a lot of people are like, well, I wish I could pledge more. It's fine. If I get lots of people with lower pledges, that can sometimes be better, because then one person unsubscribing doesn't like hit me quite as hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that I don't appreciate the high rollers, because y'all know I do. But I'm just saying there is worth to both. So, but that's it. Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we wrap this up?
No, ma'am.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We love you. Until next time, toodaloo, motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.
Joffrey. Cersei. Walder Frey.
Hodor.
Meryn Tron. Tywin Lannister.
That was an Unspoiled Network podcast.